Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio Podcast 68, our Halloween video spooktacular. It is so frightening, so scary, that all our guests were too frightened to come. That's why we have absolutely no guests tonight, because they knew how scary this was going to be, guys. So I think we should tell everybody we're also recording live via Ustream.tv. So if anyone wants to check in on Twitter, they can do that also. Being our Halloween spectacular, we are dressed in outfits. If we can go around, tell everybody what we are, it'd be nice. Russ, you are...
I'm a snuggly elephant.
You're a snuggly elephant. You're very cute. You better watch it. You're going to get a snuggle tonight. Todd, are you a snuggly god?
Yahweh.
Yahweh? Wow. Very nice. I am a snuggly kitty cat. I thought I'd go for something cute tonight instead of my normally edgy self. I thought I would just kind of...
And I know that this was fairly, perhaps... It wasn't planned. It was kind of kismet. But you guys, it looks very druid, I think, with the way you guys are dressed.
We actually, when we're done this, we're going to go arrange stones in Russ's backyard in kind of a Stonehenge-y kind of...
Russ always said it looked like a scrotum, though, because not just because of the elephant trunk dangling above his head, but the cleft in his chin, which normally makes you so handsome, but now it makes you look a little scrotum-y.
Scrotish?
Scrotish. Scrotumnal. Scrotumnal works, right?
Yeah. Did you just happen to have a Snuggie?
It's Lisa's, yeah. Obviously.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Speaking of crazy chins like Russ's, and you know, he has like a superhero chin, and I have like this. I had an injury here. The guy Gordon Ramsay from Kitchen Nightmares, you know, the guy who curses and throws food.
Yeah, blonde guy with spike hair.
He had the worst like crevasse in his chin. He has like a really like crevicey face, and his buddy Simon Cowell told him he should get that filled in. He's like. Botoxy things.
It's like chin spackle.
Yeah, it is. It's literally like spackle, and he got it done. He has to get it done like two or three times a year, and now he's like all smooth here.
Really?
So he has some craggles up here, but now where it was really...
He had like really big pop marks, like Brian Adams kind of skin?
No. He had really defined crevices and like, you know, my face is full of laugh lines. I have this like craggy face, but his is like... really delineated, like it was like someone took Play-Doh putty and took like a putty knife and went like whoosh, 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 like real deep. But he was still handsome, but now he's like super handsome, I'd say. Yeah.
So what else do we have to tease for this show?
Well, tonight we are going to not only talk about a lot of things spooktacular and Halloweenish and scary, but Todd, you had a pretty scary interview, actually a good interview, right?
Yeah,
recently
with Kip Malone.
Kip Malone
TV on the radio and Rain Machine.
Wow, that's a big name. That's a good get for us.
Yeah, I thought. As a matter of fact, I actually, and this was fairly serendipitous also, but this is not unlike his beard and hairstyle.
Really?
Yeah, but it's I've seen him,
yeah.
Yeah, he just has a giant mass of hair hanging from his face.
But it's black, it's not white hair.
It doesn't, it's not the exact same color, right.
Actually, that drawing that you did of him was very Jerry Garcia. Reminiscent.
Yeah, well, he kind of looked like a Jerry Garcia type figure.
Like a young Jerry
Garcia. He has a similar physique and way that he kind of holds himself.
Right.
And I mean, that's probably where the comparison ends. But mm-hmm. Yeah, he just a lion of independent rock, you know.
Oh, so we got that. We're gonna play that interview later. Play some songs from him, and you know, I want to start off with some good Halloween talk. But before that, why don't we? Russ has given us. Normally, we have one beer, which we all kind of share and we talk about it. But Russ gave us surprise beers tonight. So, Russ, why don't you start with your... and put it up to the camera.
I had a terrible week so far. You know, terrible being relative. I'm making things right with an Innocent Gun.
Wow.
My favorite beer of all time.
That is like the best. That's the beer that tastes like a good like whiskey or scotch.
Yeah.
I was handed Allagash, white beer brewed with spices.
Allagash, Sam Caglione from Dogfish Head Brewer. He's good friends with the Allagash guy.
Oh, is he?
So you know it's good beer if he's friends with that guy, right?
You see that they just got a shipment of their Panagia? Is that it?
Oh.
Beer and like very, very limited quantities made it to the Northeast. So
wow.
if you can find it, snatch it up.
It's funny that like when you say about like a shipment made it here safely. Like, yeah. It's like such precious cargo. And it harkens back to me with Smokey and the Bandit. Remember the crux of the movie Smokey and the Bandit? Was Smokey and the Bandit were hired to run interference for Jerry Reed was driving a truck across state lines. You know what the truck was filled with? Coors beer.
There you go.
The Paul Williams character wanted Coors beer in a different state, but it's illegal. So that was what the whole movie was about.
I don't know that I've ever seen that. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
You never saw Smokey and the Bandit?
I was like,
we used to stay up and watch it when I was a kid when it was on TV. Wow. But anyway, that Panagia beer, I think, is one of the ones that they made by, you know, doing excavations and
figuring. Oh, that's the one he...
It's one of those, because now they have a handful of those that they've done.
It's like archaeology beer.
Yeah, but...
He was in cahoots with the guy at Penn, archaeology department.
I believe it's one of those, and it's supposed to be fantastic, so if you see it, snatch it up, and I learned all this on their Twitter stream.
Wow.
Hey, Jeff, you're drinking?
I'm drinking. It's actually called Blonde Bitch by Morehouses. It's a pint of ale. Premium light, refreshing ale with a sweet citrus dry finish.
How is it?
It's pretty good. I don't want to use the word, but drinkable. Like, it goes down real easy. Hmm. And most ales, the thing I like about the ale is the aftertaste. I like to kind of savor a good ale aftertaste. This one, not so much. It's just very smooth and goes down. Hmm. So, a little different.
All right.
Before we get into our first song, I always like to throw out a topic that's kind of, you know, a little out there, but this has nothing to do with Halloween. It has something to do with, Todd, your hometown. Not your hometown, the town you live in now.
Okay.
Something that's very sad about the recession and everything that's going on and when businesses go out of business. There's nothing worse to me when you drive by a business that you like, not necessarily love, but was convenient for you, served a purpose for you. And not only does it close down, but it's replaced with something...
That you don't need, like a nail salon?
you don't need, but it's just so irrelevant to you.
Like a strip mall placeholder.
Yes.
Like, it's completely irrelevant to your life. And yeah.
Right. So, Todd, in your neighborhood, I noticed that, I run by it all the time, the delicious Hope's Cookies is gone, and Norbert Video. Obviously, video stores are nowhere to be found.
Oh, really? It finally went out, huh?
Right. So that had a nice prime piece of real estate, parking lot across from a bagel store, right on the main strip in downtown Norbert. What was it replaced with, Todd?
Some kind of foot center, I think.
No, it was replaced with Mainline Audiology.
Oh,
so
audiology.
You want to get a hearing aid. You want the cutting-edge hearing aid things. So that just depressed me so much that in your town, your little walkable area, something that you used for good is now not good for you.
I wouldn't go as far as saying evil. It's evil.
I used to rent movies there. But it really is true. I mean, you know, all of those little mom-and-pop video stores are all gone.
All gone. But but the thing in our area is everything's replaced with a nail salon or a bank. Banks are still thriving. Bank of America has opened 3 new branches and replaced, like, stores that I kind of like. So to me, it not only bums me out the stores are gone, but when they're replaced with just something horrible.
Any store that closes down kind of tugs at the heartstrings to me. It's really,
me
to me, it's like
a small business.
It's a physical representation of dashed dreams and hopes. Like,
I say it all the time.
It's really kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's that, and also, this is way too sentimental, but I like the fact that when I was a kid, there were still a handful of places that my parents went to when they were kids that they could take me to. That was particularly true in Queens, where my mom grew up. She could take us to pizza parlors that she hung out at as a kid, and there was just that really cool sense of history. There are a very small handful of places that I went to and frequented as a kid that even still exist. A very small handful, and I'm not even sure I can name them anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that really stinks, because I would love to be able to take my kids into a place someday and be like, when I was a kid, we used to have pizza here. It's the best. You know, my mom could say that. She'd be like, this is the
kids,
best.
We're going to get a hearing aid. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like, she could be like,
everybody now.
The best meatball parm that I had as a kid is at Pizza City in Howard Beach. Let's go.
No, it's at Domino's now. It's
but
fantastic.
You know, and that stuff is gone. For the most part.
Right.
Yeah, I thought I would start off the podcast with a real downer topic.
And then replaced by franchise. But I guess the upside is if you like to shop at Target now, you can move anywhere in the world and tell your kid, like, hey, I used to shop in a Target when I was...
Yeah. right.
And then you have the exact same experience here in North Dakota.
And that's the thing of it. There's just nothing warm and fuzzy and like Polaroid memory-ish about, like, Best Buy has the best TVs. Let's go there or whatever it is, you know? Because it could be even something as simple as that. Like, oh, let's go see, you know, that old guy, Ferdinand, who fixes our TVs.
So let me ask you this. Do you vote with your dollars? Do you go to places? Will you pay more? Because my wife and I actually disagree about this from time to time. And she loves a bargain. And she will go to those bulk stores that we despise for a lot of reasons. And she does as well. But we'll want to get the good deal. Whereas I say, I'd rather actually walk into town in Narberth, pay 10-15%
at Rickland's
more,
Hardware,
and buy it at a privately owned place.
I think it depends on the week. Like, sometimes I do feel strongly about that. First of all, your wife is baffling in that she actually haggles at the big box store. That is baffling. I was just telling somebody about that. Like, they were like, I was like, why when you're buying a car is it this crazy like game you have to play? Why isn't it just here's the price, end of story? Mm-hmm. Like, why do we feel? Why is it that item for some reason, and houses too? But I guess I can understand that a little bit more. That we feel like we're allowed to haggle, and that's part of the game. I was like, you don't walk into like a Best Buy and haggle for the TV, and then I stopped myself and said, well, actually Heather Hall does.
Yeah, she does everywhere, as a matter of fact.
And she
For anything?
Yeah, and you would be surprised.
Your wife is
that she finagles.
She's a nightmare.
Way.
Thank God I don't own a small business. If I saw her come in, I'd be like out in the Auslander. Get out of my store.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up car dealerships though, because no one would like that more than the car dealers themselves.
Really?
They despise having to haggle. They would love to have... Because, frankly, the average sale is a much smaller percentage of increase or difference from retail and wholesale than any other item. So, that first of all, they don't really even make that much,
right,
even though it's a big-ticket item, so it evens out that way. But they would love to just concentrate on the dealing with the service of the people and the product lines and not have to worry about the negotiation part.
Yeah, I bet. That's true.
And, you know, I used to work as a car salesman, so I have some insight to this. The thing that really burns you up when you're in the business is the people that are the biggest pains in the asses, the ones that walk into the dealership and you despise, are the ones that are walking out with the best deals.
Sure.
And the ones that you actually spend a day or two with and like, and you know, you feel like some kind of connection with them, or they feel like good people, they are getting raked over the coals.
Do you know, Todd, you gave me...
I'm quite sure that's me.
When I the only time, you know, you're supposed to haggle in my mind is getting a car. Like, that's just part of the game. So I asked you for advice, being an ex-car salesman and your dad is a successful car dealership owner, and you basically gave me great advice. Was you go in there, you talk to the guy, you get his lowest price, you know, comes back and goes, okay, thank you for your price, I'm going to go to X dealership now and see if they can beat it. And lo and behold, you're not going to walk out the door before they grab you again and go, let me get you another number. It's exactly what I did.
And
I got
it. Wait a minute, Jeff. Let me introduce you to my sales manager.
Oh, Jerry? All right.
Yeah, that's the easiest. That's the best and most effective way to
do it. And that's what I did. I did
car.
It once, and I like, fine, got the car, and I wasn't buying, you know, a Mercedes, so I wasn't like, I realized that if I'm getting a car for this much money, if I knock it down another grand, this guy's not making, you know, more than $400 on the car, you know, whatever. So.
But the price that someone quotes you at a car dealership that they are content with you leaving their dealership and going to another is their lowest price.
Yes, that's what you said. Mm-hmm. And that rang true with me. If so,
you don't even,
like,
actually have to even go to the next place as long as you are aware that there is one. Well, and say, like, oh, I'm going to Sussman's now.
My mistake was I walked out in a huff. I'm going, to another place to check that out. And I just hid behind their dealership for an hour. And then the guy came up for a cigarette and he goes, Jeff, what are you doing? You don't have another dealership, do you? I go, no. He goes, come back inside. I'm going to sell you a car. And I go, okay, Ron. And then Ron sold me. And you know what? He was kind of mad at me, so it was an extra $400 he charged me. Anyway, I am so excited. I can barely control myself. I had my songs for the show all ready to go, right? And then via Twitter, punknews.com, under Twitter account, said, Jeff, new Lawrence Arms song, Demons. It's perfect for many reasons. The song is called Demons. This is a Halloween show. Lawrence Arms, my favorite band out there right now, their latest album, which I mentioned in our last podcast, was, it's a play on an old 70s
band.
Oh,
Butt, Sweat, and Tears.
Butt, Sweat, and Tears. And this is their new song, Demon, a bonus track off the EP, their new EP on Fat Wreck Records. This is the Lawrence Arms and Demons.
I got too drunk at your wedding and my voice got loud and I said some creepy things and I staggered around and even though you're bring back the time. It ain't gonna stop just because you walk away. And you could cry for the things that you lost, but you're never gonna bring back these days. I hate the Mondays and the Fridays, cause they always define the endless march of pushing roots that's leading the line. Well, if I'm gonna be dying, then I wanna get high. Let's burn a bridge for the fuck up in and kill this night. With some beers down at the pitch with whiskey lips, and we'll try to love for the moment and forget for the night. And life doesn't usually feel great. And the dying ain't gonna stop just because you walk away. And you could cry for the things that you love, but you never gonna. But you're never gonna bring back these days. You're never gonna bring back these days.
And we're back, people. Use Wigs, podcast 68, Spooktacular. You're here, God's here, Snuggy Elephant's here, and Snuggy Cat's here. If you're watching this, I know you probably have a strong urge to hug your monitor and just get it over with. We'll come back right at you. Oh, there we go.
You guys, look like a Thundercats reject. like the wise one that didn't make the cut.
I'm the sapient, old, out-of-shape cat that just couldn't keep up on the...
He's from the live-action movie.
Yeah.
Link so.
All right, you Thundercats, let's see who's going to make the cut. You, the fat one back there, who's reading a book.
Yeah, I had asthma. I'm not supposed to do the obstacle course.
All right. Thunder Jeff, we're going to have to see if you're going to... what's going to happen with you. Guys, Halloween... has something ever literally, like, scared the shit out of you? Not the shit out of you, but have you ever been so scared? And it not in, like, an emotional thing, like, you know, like a family crisis or something like that. Like, something unexpected could be... I know, Todd, you do not believe in the ghosts and goblins and stuff like that. But have you ever been so scared that you were like, oh, my God!
Well, by actual threats.
Yeah, thing. Oh, threats.
Well, like if you walk down...
If you walk
down an alley and there is someone there,
right.
Like an unsavory character, then yeah. Yes, I felt fear.
Right.
In that respect, but not from...
What's the most scared... All right, what's the most scared you've ever been in your life?
Although, when I was little, The Exorcist.
Yeah,
was
okay.
Was a very, very scary movie. To this day, I will still say that movie is kind of creepy.
I told Kelly it's still the scariest movie that I have a hard time watching.
And I've never seen it, actually.
What?
It's very...
It's because you're scared?
No.
The second scariest movie in the world is probably The Exorcist 2, only because it has like four different clips of The Exorcist 1 in it. That's how scary The Exorcist 1 is.
Do you know the writer was the house that was filmed in, The Exorcism itself? William Peter Blatty, the writer, actually lived in that same exact room like 20 years prior when he was in college.
Wow.
Yes, I just made that up.
Did you like
no, that's actually a fact.
So,
okay. No, seriously. So have you ever been scared crapless?
Well, only from situations I've been in. Like, I got stuck in a cave.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Literally,
that's the scariest story.
Tell them. When I was a freshman in college, a bunch of people early on were, like, going caving one night, and I didn't really know anybody, so when they were all leaving, they were just announcing, oh, we're going caving, who wants to go? And I thought, oh, this will be a good way to make some friends. I'm in. Like, that sounds like a crazy college thing. So I ran upstairs and got...
I promised myself that I was going to... Yeah.
Right.
Make one new caving friend every day. Russ, make...
Spelunker?
Yeah. So I ran upstairs, put on a flannel, and we went, right? So anyway, we get into the cave. Once we're inside there and you crawl in and everything, it was pretty cool. We had flashlights. Then they said, all right, hey, guys, we're getting ready to go. There's one of two ways you can leave. You can either go back out the way you came, which was fairly tight, but no big deal. Or you can go out via the corkscrew.
Oh, Russ, right? You didn't choose the corkscrew, did you?
So out of, it was probably 20 of us, about five of us said, oh, I'll try the corkscrew. And of course, I was like, sure, I'll try the corkscrew. So Jeff Bowling, who I didn't even really know at the time, was in front of me.
Who was a giant guy and does not belong.
That's right.
Crawling through corkscrews.
So there was five of us, literally squishing through these little tiny caverns of rock. It's pitch black. It was so tight that you had your hands in front of you up over your head, and you could not move them down to your side. Like, you were literally kind of inhaling and squishing through these, like, weird... It would have been like how you see an ant farm from the side. And we're bending our bodies and crushing up and down, all this kind of stuff.
Against each other?
No.
Like,
no.
That'd be
literally,
so sexy.
Literally, all... You couldn't move your hands. All you could see was your hands holding the flashlight and then the soles of the shoes of the person in front of you and rock all around it. That's all you could see.
Dude, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
So, do you have claustrophobia?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, here's what happened. So, there was only one way out. And we were bending and contorting in all these crazy ways, but generally moving along, kind of like almost like peristalsis through intestines, just kind of squishing along. Finally, Jeff can't move anymore, and I just see the soles of his feet, and I'm like, what's going on? And everybody starts getting a little antsy.
Oh, no.
And then I just hear him start to scream,
I can't move anymore!
Like, and he basically, at one point there was a split, and he went the wrong way. And so... We were all head to foot crushed in this little...
How many people again?
Five of us. And
any chicks or just all
There was a girl,
party?
Actually, like two people behind me. And
if it was just one closer.
We could not move.
I'd grab stuff.
So basically, we're freaking out. Everybody is like screaming, but all you hear is like muffled screams. But that goes on for maybe 5 minutes.
Right.
And then you get to the point where, okay, I'm kind of like cried out. And
did you cry?
I don't think I...
Did you cry?
Honestly, I don't think I cried, but it was pretty terrifying because...
I don't
think
blame
about
you.
It this way. Like, imagine you get wrapped up, like, in blankets or something. Like,
sure.
And you feel constricted, but you can still push against it.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no give.
No way. I cried the first time you told me this story.
Yeah. So what happened was, finally when we collected ourselves, it was like, well, we either stay here and suffocate and die, or we try to figure out what to do. So what we started doing was pulling each other's ankles... back, like, inch
by
inch.
Could you actually speak? Like, could you...
Well, you had to wait...
Was there a game plan?
You had to wait till everybody calmed down so that you could actually communicate and hear each other with the muffled screaming. And we were pulling each other back, and I'm talking, like... So picture like you're sitting on a chair, right?
Yeah.
And the way that you're sitting on the chair is that you crawled up from underneath it.
What?
Like, that's kind of... So, like, the way... We had to, like, crush ourselves, like, backwards under these...
Todd, you look really freaked out.
This story...
It was ridiculous.
This is the worst story I've ever heard.
Like, the way we had to...
I always beg him to tell it.
The way we had to get out of there, we were, like, bruised and scraped, and, like, it really hurt.
I would have dropped out of college.
We were bending in ways that we weren't really meant to bend.
Oh.
And so, finally, we, like, pulled back to the point where we got to where the V was.
I'm optioning the rights to this movie right now. It's going to be the best 10 minutes...
And then we went out the other way.
Imagine how terribly that could have ended.
Oh yeah,
just like the rotten corpses of five college kids stuck.
Well, it could have. So then we went the other way, and after we got onto the right path, we were praying that was the right path, and it was still another 15 or 20 minutes before. By then, it had gotten dark outside, and finally, I'm talking a tiny little sliver. We could see stars, and it was like coming out of like the birthing canal. We're just like, like it was literally in a field.
Breach.
At that point, it was in a field that was way far away from the entrance of the cave, and we just come out of this crack in the middle of the field, and everybody is gasping for air and sweating and like kind of whimpering. It was terrible.
I'd option the right to the movie, and I would just. Really called Idiot Stuck. Stuck Idiots. Idiot Stuck. People, if you come up with a name for the movie, picture Russ
Sticky
in
idiots.
A cave
Sticky.
In somewhere in Kutchtown.
How about Corkscrewed?
Yeah. Sticky Cave. I got a good movie. It's called Sticky Cave. You go into that cave.
That
you're going to get stuck.
Do you think we're going to keep that story?
Yeah.
If we will, then we got to go to a song.
That's a really scary... That's an actual scary story.
Okay.
Not about, you know, ghost spirit nonsense. Like, that's...
Thank you, God.
So do you think, God Todd, do you think that you could top that when we get back with a scary...
Not with a scary story.
Well,
no.
But Jeff, you asked, so I think that there's got to be something hiding there for you.
Yeah, I normally will not bring up a topic that I don't have something great.
So let's make that a cliffhanger. Okay. Let's play some music.
All right, we're going to play a song. And Joe Buck, how about Ankle Grab? Great name, Joe Buck, for an... Joe, I think the problem with Ankle Grabber as the title of your movie, you're going to get a couple different audiences.
Might send the wrong message.
That, now, right there, Ustream is justified for me.
We did. Right, Joe Buck, you have just justified this technology called Ustream. Because we had Sticky Cave, Stuck Russ, Uncle Russ Get Stuck, they all sucked. Ankle Grabber. Joe, I might give you a co-writing credit on that one.
Whose pick is it?
Russ, you have a song
yes,
for us.
Yes, I would like to go. This is a local Philadelphia band, actually. It's the Swimmers.
Swimmers.
And they're back. And
brand new album.
They recorded this actually themselves. They kind of, I think they had an early release. They left that label. They kind of decided, you know what, let's do the DIY thing like a lot of other people are doing.
Sure.
The results are fantastic. The album is coming out November 3rd. It is called People Are Soft.
They
and,
are.
This is one of the poppier tracks on it. It's called 100 Hearts. Hearts by the Swimmers, Philadelphia's own Swimmers.
Very nice, Russ. Very nice. Now, guys, I just wanted to bring that up because I've never really been scared silly, scared senseless, like, holy crap, like, someone's breaking in my house, like, I gotta grab a flashlight. Like, I'm always prepared for it. I have a giant mag light next to my bed. So when someone does break
like
in the
like
house...
a really heavy one that you can actually strike?
Oh, no. It's like 3 ounces, this little. But I'm so skilled with my hands that it's just kind of, you know, to... But it's like, not that I wanted that feeling, but I kind of do. The closest I think I ever came was driving on a road back in where I used to live, and a giant deer just ran in front of my car. And you're not expecting a deer, and you're going, oh, it's only going like 35. But those things are huge, and I missed it by about a foot. That's when I went. You know, like slammed on the brakes, and I felt an amazing wave of holy shit come through me. You know what I mean? You stop, you get out of the car, and you watch the deer scamper away. You're like, good freaking Lord. If the, you know, like, really, that's as close as I came to being scared. Getting back to the ghost thing, which we talked about, I witnessed a ghosty action. I told you about that. We're at. a dinner.
A ghosty action,
Ty. That's what they're called in the ghost hunting world.
Or a draft.
No, it actually...
That's what I call them.
It was New Year's Eve a few years ago. We're at dinner, three couples, us, Brian Seymour and his wife, another couple, Doug and Vic, and they lived in a haunted house. And Mary was the ghost, and I put my glass of red wine on top of the fireplace, and it was a Trinity in Philadelphia, which means you have the kitchen in the bottom floor. Beautiful house. We all sit down at the table. My red wine is on the fireplace, 3 feet away from us. Doug, who's cooking, turns his back. We all go back to our table. We're sitting there, and like 2 minutes later, all you hear is crash. The glass is on the floor, broken, about 2 feet from the mantle, which means it couldn't have just fallen. It was like taken off and
which
dropped.
Means it had to be a ghost.
It was, yeah, it had to be a ghost.
There's only one other answer. Yep.
Who else could it have been? Mary was not happy with so many people reveling in the house. That's how I take it.
Did they actually name the ghost like it was a pet, or was there a woman named Mary?
There was
Mary
a woman named
there?
I think, you know, there's always a story.
Can we keep it?
Yeah.
I want to call it Mary.
I think over the course of our lives, I mean, I probably have had 20 or 30 times that I really thought I was going to die and like just missed it, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like that deer kind of thing, and you're like, "Oh my gosh."
But is that what thrill, like people who drink Mountain Dew, is that what they go for? That
endorphins?
I guess they're called endorphins. I don't live an endorphin-filled life, you know what I mean? Like, if I get, like,
people
a JavaScript to work correctly, I get pretty friggin' pumped that I walk out of my office and I, like, just high-five and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I need that, man. Like I think that's what the bungee jumping and the skydiving and diving
like. But you perform live. You perform live music.
And there you go.
At least I can say doing art live, I'm chasing that excitement and that thrill.
Right.
Guys, I want to get into a little horror movie stuff. I love a good horror movie. I thought I'd give some trivia. I always think it's fun because I throw out this trivia and you two look at each other like, I don't know that movie. So I'm expecting a lot of that. I'm expecting, hey, someone from Chicago just checked in. I mean, Colorado. Sad Sack Superman from Colorado just checked in.
Ah, that is...
Superman.
That's our buddy, Daniel de Blasio.
De Blas. De Blas, this is a question for you. Who won an Oscar for his leading role, although he was only on screen for just over 16 minutes in this horror chiller movie? It's the least amount of time a lead actor has ever won for.
Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins.
Wow, Todd, very nice. Very good. Look
Wait,
at that.
What?
Anthony Hopkins
won for his Hannibal Lecter performance.
He was only on screen for
16 minutes? 16 minutes. Why are you looking at me, Russ? You want a challenge me on that?
No.
Seems about right. Well, when I saw that movie,
I thought Russ was going to hit me.
And me and two of my buddies went to go see that movie. It was a very... not a horror movie. It was fairly macabre and kind of a thriller.
Yeah.
And the guy in front of us almost died choking on popcorn. It was the most bizarre thing. We're kind of on the edge of our seats.
Literally. Eat his liver.
And the guy just suddenly stands up in front of us. The wife goes, "Oh my God!" And he just kind of starts stumbling up the aisle doing this. Just like, you know, motioning towards his neck like he's choking. And then drops down to his knees like that.
What?
And we were just like, you know, three 17-year-olds maybe in high school. And we were scared out of our minds, you know, because of the movie to begin with. And then this is going on. And then finally, just all of a sudden you hear...
He threw up.
He kind of coughed and threw it all up.
Oh,
and then
no.
And then went back to his seat. And the managers came and wanted to pull him out because he had to do some kind of... paperwork or log the incident, and then he got really angry because he wanted to see the end of the movie. this huge
big
confrontation,
fat popcorn dripping down his chin.
This guy was a very emotional evening for this guy, you know.
So
he didn't want to leave. So,
okay. What was the first Stephen King movie that was adopted into a novel?
Stand by Me,
Carrie.
Wow, Russ, very nice.
What?
It was the first novel that was adapted into a movie. I said it backwards.
Hey.
But Todd understood what I was getting
at.
That's right.
I de-jeffed it.
If I had understood.
I de-jeffed the question.
You de-jeffed it. Very nice.
Your secret decoder ring.
Here's a good one. This cult classic horror film was actually going to be called Star Beast. So think space.
Alien?
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Russ, you get a point. Alien, that's right.
Would you call that a cult classic?
It says cult classic. Yeah. Aliens 2, a much better movie. Aliens 2 is one of the greatest movies of all time in my top 10.
Okay.
I'll give you one more before we go to break, okay? This is great, and I want everybody out there to think about this one. You always hear the tagline, "Be afraid, be very afraid," right? That's kind of classic.
And we think that came from Jaws, right?
Well, yeah, if you just, even, you know, someone just says it as like a funny, ironic thing to say. But do you know what movie that actually came from? It's not Jaws. And it's a movie that I didn't think was as scary as it was grotesque.
What year?
Oh, wow. I'll give you an actress, Gina Davis. And I'll give you a word.
Not a fan of hers.
Kafka-esque.
The Fly?
The Fly, Russ. Very nice. See, Russ took Kafka to Metamorphosis to The Fly.
Did you see The Fly? Is there part
The Fly 2?
Yeah.
It's a rap movie. It's awesome.
Okay. So, as you know, a few eves ago, Friday night, I caught up with TV on the Radio and Rain Machine's Kip Malone. I caught him touring under or as or with Rain Machine, which is his brand new solo project. But of course, this is the third time I've seen him. I saw him a couple times with TV on the Radio, and I'm a big fan of both. So let's listen in as I meet up with one Kip Malone. First, you're going to hear the way that I became acquainted to Kip Malone with TV on the Radio. This is coming from their first album, Desperate Youth, Bloodthirsty Babes. And this was, I guess you would call it, their hit single, or at least the one that most people know. Very, very radio-friendly and very catchy. This is Staring at the Sun. But soon after, immediately following, you will hear my chat in the green room at Johnny Brennan's with Kip Malone. And then, following that, you'll hear Kip's newest work, released under Rain Machine, and the track called New Last Name.
Cross the street from your storefront cemetery.
Reporting for Used Wigs Radio in the green room at Johnny Brenda's, and I had the pleasure of sitting with the reigning king of the indie rock world, I would say, Kip Malone of course, TV on the Radio, and now Rain Machine. And I guess I shouldn't even say of Rain Machine. You basically are Rain Machine.
Well, I would first say that if there's any truth to what you said about being the reigning king of indie rock, I abdicate the throne immediately and hand it to any fool. But I recorded the record, the Rain Machine record, mostly by myself. I had some friends sing backup on some songs. Mm-hmm. But Rain Machine is a band, and we're on tour right now. Mm-hmm. So the band is Rain Machine.
Okay,
the band is five people.
Mm-hmm. So you're touring with a five piece, but for the recording, you're responsible for the lion's share.
Thus far.
And even down to the album artwork, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And so this is a very personal project for you.
Sure.
And running the risk of asking a very cliche question, but being a very powerful creative force in TV on the radio, how do you separate what will be a rain or when you were kind of creating Rain Machine, what was a Rain Machine song and a TV on the Radio song?
So far, in working with TV on the Radio, we go in the studio and I write in the studio. Mm-hmm. And almost every song that I've written for TV on the Radio has been written in the studio while we were working on a record. So it hasn't been difficult at all to delineate.
Gotcha.
What goes where, you know? I mean, this record, a lot of the Rain Machine record is, I'd say a third of it, fairly old material that I've just been playing around solo. But, and then I'd say at least half of it is written in the studio. Mm-hmm. I like to write in the studio. So.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of writing, and you know, even down to the name of both projects and a lot of the lyrics, they seem a little bit abstract, open for interpretation. Is that something mindfully done to let the listener or the consumer of the work be an active participant?
Well, I think that everyone does that. I mean, I don't know of a band called Four Guys Who Wear Black and have bad attitudes.
Uh-huh. Right, good point, yeah.
Call themselves Black Rebel Motorcycle Club or something like that.
Right.
Which is a good name for a band, by the way. I'm not dissing them directly. That, like, what is a Led Zeppelin? I know what a, like, you know, what is an LED Zeppelin? Like, what does that mean? Like, mm-hmm. It means all the associations that you have with that band, you know, wherever you listen to their music, whatever, like, you know, whatever thing the media projected onto it, whatever thing, you know, they embodied and presented, you know, it means a bunch of different things. And when music is being made and delivered in this way through a band, that's kind of the, what you're shooting for, or most people I know are shooting for.
And speaking for shooting for, Kurt Vonnegut was famous for saying that that he wrote for his, I believe it was his sister, and if other people enjoyed the work, it was always geared toward that one kind of individual reader. Do you have a particular individual that you write your music and record your music for, and then there might be just overlap with the rest of the fans that are appreciating your work?
I think that Kurt Vonnegut might have meant that the first time he said it, but as far as I know, his sister was not his editor. Mm-hmm. Or his publishing company. Like, I don't know, it gets confusing, or it can be confusing. I write for myself and my friends. I feel fortunate to have a lot of friends that are doing inspiring creative work, and, you know, that's who I can actually know, you know. If you're writing for people that you don't know, or writing for something really outside of yourself, then, like, you're kind of, like, groping in the dark and getting into dangerous territory of, like, trying to pander to tastes, which is anathema to the creative process as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah,
I write for me and my friends. Mm-hmm. And Kurt Vonnegut.
Well, as perhaps not being one of the inner members of your circle of your friends, but I certainly appreciate what you're doing, and both,
you know,
with.
Yeah, I don't mean to present it in any sort of elitist way. Mm-hmm. Just trying to be real about, like, what is possible for me to know, you know.
Oh, of course, you can't.
I'm not trying to do stuff and keep it a secret. I would like people to dig what we're doing, you know, for sure, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't get up in front of strangers every night, you know. Mm-hmm. And try to convince them
right.
that it's legit. But in the process of writing, that's a different place than being on tour and being on the road, you know.
And one more question, and perhaps a heavy question, but you know, being an African American indie rock musician, mm-hmm. and perhaps those labels don't perhaps you don't even think about those labels, or they don't fit you perfectly. But it almost, no matter how you stack it, makes you a minority within a minority. Before you had the acclaim that you enjoy now, did you run into issues or situations where you didn't look like the way people expected you to look when they heard your music, or you didn't sound like the way people expected you to sound?
I guess, I don't know. It's kind of a moot point to me, considering, you know, when that comes up, I feel like pulling out a notebook full of lists, talking about the history of popular music in America, which is a lot more integrated than market forces would want one to believe, you know. Maybe not new country, you know, but everything else seems like it's an open game.
Yeah.
You know? And has been. I mean, like, what is Chuck Berry supposed to sound like?
Mm-hmm.
And what is Jimi Hendrix supposed to sound like?
Mm-hmm.
And what is Nina Simone supposed to sound like? What is Mick Collins supposed to sound like? What is Bad Brain supposed to sound like? What is Fishbone supposed to sound like? What is Block Party supposed to sound like?
Yeah, and
like, it's like, there's just
Living Color. Living Color,
Living
yeah.
Color was like, there's like, you know, what is love? What is, like, I'm making a list, and I feel like I feel stupid making a list because Sly and the Family Stone, because why? Because it's so broad and so much the heavy hitters and the people that have been canonized, that the idea that that anyone would have expectations about the way someone is supposed to do something, about the way someone is supposed to sound, then it's like a form of like a really severe cultural amnesia. And
the idea
that you're supposed to be one way, that you're supposed to fall into an expectation set by a society that is like, I don't know, the idea of letting race determine who one is, race being something that is a societal creation in the first place, and a societal creation used to divide and control people, as far as I can tell, you know. And why, like the idea of even engaging in that dialogue, like, I do, because it is a societal reality, but I just want to be free.
Yeah, and it's just something that I brought it up, and I can't help but think about it, because I'm an art teacher, and I present the work of Romare Bearden, for instance, or female artists for that matter. And at what point, some ways I feel responsible to present them as a black artist, or as a female artist, or as a homosexual artist, you know. But then I feel, is that doing a disservice or an injustice to the person, or is it? And then, but then, does it connect with some of the students, like, out there and hey, well, I'm a young black person, or I'm a female, and I can make it in the art world. So I wonder where that line is. You know, like, how much is too much, and how much is enough, or do you completely ignore? And then, of course, some people, their work is about that gender or that race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm not ignoring it in my work.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up, but I don't know. Like, as far as blackness is concerned, it's obvious, you know.
Yeah.
As it is defined in this culture. I don't know. You ever know of a video artist named Marlon Riggs? You should check him out. Someone to present to your kids, although you might get fired. I don't know. he's one of the people that took an NEA grant and did, I think he did his piece Tongues Untied, which is about gay black male identity and internalized racism and internalized homophobia. It's got a lot of the poet Essex Hemphill's work in it. Hemphill, I don't know how you say that name. The 104th Congress, Newt Gingrich, the, you know, neoconservative revolution during the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
It was him and the dude who did the Piss Christ piece, mm-hmm. who they latched onto as like the dangerous, why
Serrano.
David Serrano.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why they took, how they gutted the NEA.
And the funding came under fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Marlon Riggs did a film called Black Is, Black Ain't. And it's one of my favorite experimental documentaries. And he's just talking about identity politics and identity, and going around and interviewing people in different walks of life and asking them how they define themselves and how they see themselves. And, you know, I have no problem talking about myself as a black man in this world, but I'm going to define what it means to be black for myself. I'm going to define what it means to be a man for myself. And I have felt that way for a long time. I remember seeing that film and feeling like I wasn't alone in thinking that.
Well, that's very well said, yeah. and we'll leave it at that. Thrilled to see this project. I've seen you a couple times live with the other band, and I'm really excited about this. Love the album, and keep doing what you do.
Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Glass with some crow and some rocks and some crow and some rocks and some crutch reverb. It's a hi-hat, a click, and a crush and a contact. Do you know your worth? Just mud, skips, takes higher stakes in orbit to perturb. And the clearest lack of love's intact in all your dumb rhyming words. But who is it to blame? I tried to change my name to Big Fag. Yourself into too comfortable a corner without trying. It's a good enough place from which to view the race and call out all your lies. Let me see your shame, babe. Shake it good for fame's sake, for every hungry eye. With any luck, what's his face or what's his fuck? Tell you that you're fly, but I got clouds to climb. Yes, I'm that glass pipe unicorn, the who you thought you was. Come on, let's get high.
An Evening with Kip Malone. You heard first TV on the Radio, and then our interview, our chat. And of course, again, coming out of that was Rain Machine, new last name. But I think it's remarkable in that it was definitely, for me, the most stimulating interview. And I guess I've conducted now, you know, 20
yeah.
or so. And it was one of the most stimulating interviews I've done because he was a very... cerebral, very thoughtful guy, and I think I came at him with some questions that were a little heavy, and some of the stuff he didn't respond the way that I would have imagined.
I like it.
And,
nice.
Yeah. Although being there in person, he was a warmer person than he might sound like on that interview, because there were a lot of smiles and smirks.
Sure, sure.
That you don't hear, yeah. Obviously. So it might sound more combative as at least at the beginning than it really was. But I found it very stimulating. I mean,
that's great. Guys, I have a question for you. In what vampire movie did David Bowie appear in 1983? David Bowie.
Vampire movie.
He was in a vampire kind of love story in 1983.
I feel like that was Mick Jagger, no?
You could feel that, but you'd be wrong.
Vampire movie, I don't
1983.
Know.
The Hop, look, Sad Sack Superman chiming in from Colorado, The Hunger, correct.
Whoa!
Nice job. Mick Jagger was in, his most famous role, I think, as an actor was Ned Kelly playing the Australian outlaw. It's a very small movie. Mick Jagger might have been in it. You know what? He was in a movie with...
What about computer technology and...
No, he was in a great short movie with David Bowie where they almost made out together and they danced a lot.
Are you talking about...
I think it was called Dancing in the Street. Yeah. It was one of my favorite short indie movies.
Was it Flapjack or something?
Yeah, Free Jack.
Free Jack.
That's what I was thinking of. Free Jack.
What is...
Flapjack.
Sad Sack, my name is Legion. Is that it? Is that a Mick Jagger...
I'll take it.
Joint?
If it makes me a writer.
No.
What is Joe Buck saying there? Can we get a conservative blogger fight update?
Oh, yes.
What does that mean?
We're going to actually, if you could, Todd, could you type in the Twitter name of your conservative blogger foe, if you can remember it? Todd probably has on his...
That would actually be great if we could get more people razzing her.
I would love to have
Joe,
and
everybody out there, if you must know, Todd is very combative with a conservative blogger. She's like a young woman, like blonde.
I sniff them out.
You sniff them out.
And I reply... via Twitter.
I think like Todd throws out like bait, like he'd be fishing, right, Todd? And then you find these hungry young Republicans.
I will search terms like Glenn Beck,
and you'll just attack.
All right. Well, while he's looking that up, let's get some more of your comments or your trivia.
Yeah, it's this trivia is gold. This is stuff I researched while I was supposed to be working on a client thing today. So this is very important. The night he came home was a tagline for a very, very great horror movie. One of the best ever.
Hmm.
I'll give you some hints about this. The night he came home, which means this guy, this super murderer.
Jason Voorhees?
Even more super.
What's the question?
No, this is a tagline.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's the tagline, the night he came home.
The night he came home. And when he first came home, and most of the scary scenes are in daylight.
Hmm.
When a young Jamie Lee Curtis...
Oh, Halloween?
Halloween, yeah.
Michael Myers.
That's right.
Okay.
Sometimes dead is better.
Oh, that's Pet Sematary.
Nice, Todd.
That was Fred Gwynne who said that, I believe, in the movie.
Yeah. Very
Sometimes
nice.
Sometimes dead is better. That's my Fred Gwynne impression.
That was a very spot on Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne is Herman Munster.
Yes.
Darn.
There's Jeff's impression.
That's one of my good impressions. I do Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca, one of my good impressions, and Fred Gwynne.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, Leatherface, the terrifying character from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre films, is based on what real-life serial killer who liked to dress up in the skin of his victims?
Whoa.
You know what's freaky? There are people who devote websites and are really into serial killers, like just collecting information or fascinated about serial killers. Like, they're the people the FBI really needs to focus on. Ed Gein was the name of the serial killer. Not familiar with his work?
No. Mm-mm. Proudly.
Guys, I have a new bit I want to introduce to the show. Every week I'd like to, I bring new bits in and I have them once or twice and then they die out. We know that's true, right? This one's called Worst Thing I Ever Heard. This will be a list of the worst things I ever heard. For this segment, especially it's a Halloween horror thing, the worst thing I ever heard is a song called Nightmare on My Street by DJ Jazzy Jess and the Fresh Prince.
I remember that.
If you really think about DJ Jazzy Jeff, he had one decent song, correct? His parents don't understand. It was cute. Fire up. Go to YouTube. Just put in Nightmare on My Street, DJ Jazzy Jeff. It's the same exact song. He changes the words.
They even use the spray-painted background, I think, in the video. Yeah.
And the whole song is him meeting, like, Freddy Krueger. And... Nice, Ross. And him meeting Freddy Krueger and a little what happens between them. And thank God Will Smith found another career. You know what I mean? Because this is just one example of the many, like, really crappy novelty songs that are brought out every year for many different holidays. So, for Halloween, Monster Mash is a big one.
Yeah.
I think this was kind of his foray into, like, I need to get one of those novelties.
Yeah, a niche.
I want to fill that, right.
Carve out a little.
Right.
Or Somebody's Watching Me.
some. Is that, you know? Oh, you know a funny story about that? Who sang "Somebody's Watching Me"?
What's his name? Well, Michael Jackson sang "Backup On."
Right. Well, here's the deal. And the guy's name was Rockwell.
Rockwell, but he was like the son of the producer that owned the record company.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, that's how he got Michael Jackson to sing "Backup On It."
I didn't realize there's an R&B artist out there today called Maxwell, right? He's a very popular R&B. And I kept hearing he was like in town. He had a new album out.
Either they're talking about Rockwell.
I learned about Rockwell. And I'm like, God, that guy is staying power. Or people really love that one stupid song. Because they're making a real hullabaloo over his song. And then I was sitting there at dinner one night. And I'm talking to Kelly. And I'm like, I said something like, you know, well, friggin' Maxwell. And everybody's watching. She goes, that's Rockwell. I'm like, oh, God, there's a difference. And, like, in my brain, I went through the whole thing, like, Jeff, don't tell. You know, you thought that was the... Another song that was... People love this song, and to me, it is just... It screams novelty, but because he was a very... People like this guy, Warren Zevon.
Werewolves of London?
I hate that song. It makes me hate Warren Zevon. I don't know. It gets me to the point where I'm like, you purposely created a crappy novelty song that you know people are going to latch on to because most of the populace is dumb. And so that's another one of those novelties. So do any novelty songs really – like right now, Weird Al is embraced by the comedic community and the musical community as like a legit guy. Like with time comes acceptance.
Yeah.
Like Bon Jovi right now, I always say this, is seen like as like a pretty established guy. You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, you have a great, you know, record, 20 years of great music. Because you played them acoustic, now it means a lot more. No, your music was always sucky, it still is. And that's how I feel about Weird Al, you know, like similar.
Okay, so thank you. You have to go to some music, Jeff.
Yes.
You're up. Last song of the show.
Oh, this is a good one. This is the last song of the show?
That's correct.
This is an old gem. This is by one of my favorite bands. We played the Lawrence Arms earlier, Chicago band. Chicago, basically the best city ever for punk rock. This is their friends, Alkaline Trio, who are a very, very macabre band. They love dealing in demons and just kind of like macabre humor. And this is a song called This Could Be Love by Alkaline Trio off the 2003 album Good Morning.
I've got a book of matches, I've got a can of kerosene, I got some bad ideas involving you and me. I don't blame you for walking away. I touch myself at thoughts of flames. I shat the bed, I lay there in it, thinking of you, wide awake for days, wide awake for found you tongue-tied in my twisted little brain. You couldn't crack a smile, I didn't catch your name. I don't blame you for walking away. I'd do the same if I saw me. I swear it's not contagious. And for short steps we can erase this. Step one, slit my throat. Step two, blame my blood. Step three, cover me in dirty sheets and run laughing out of the house. Step four, stop off at Edgebrook Creek and rinse your crimson hands. You took me hostage, you made your demands. I couldn't meet him, so you cut off my fingers one by one. Like a broken record, I've got a needle scratching me. It injects the poisons of alcohol I be. I don't blame you for walking away. I'd do the same if I saw me. I swear it's not contagious. Swear to God it's not contagious. Step one, slit my throat. Step two, blame my blood. Step three, cover me in dirty sheets. Everyone laughing out of the house. Step four, stop battling Michigan and rinse your crimson hands. You took me hostage.
And we're back, people. That was one of my favorite bands, Alkaline Trio, with This Could Be Love. Do yourself a favor. Type in Alkaline Trio, This Could Be Love, in lyrics, and just read the lyrics. They're fantastic.
You owe it to yourself.
You really do, for a good laugh, and the song's great. I mean, you're going to hear it when you're on the podcast, but it's fantastic. Why don't we do some shouts, guys? What do we got, Todd? What do you got for shouting out this week?
Well, I would love to invite some people to join me at the Primer Gallery in beautiful downtown
Hatboro.
November 6th, like 6 to midnight, we'll be partying, but I'll be painting live from like maybe 7 to 9. A giant wall that will be papered from top to bottom, left to right, and I'll make one giant nonstop single session mural.
Is that Primer Gallery in the Hatboro Horsham area?
You've heard of it,
oh,
yeah.
It's great.
And they actually have, I believe, a full-fledged First Friday celebration there. So
every month they have a great
the first Friday of every month.
It's fantastic.
So there will be wine and cheese and other spirits.
Did you know it's a micro studio?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
So if you're within driving distance, join me.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
My Snuggie will be there. Russ Snug.
I will be there.
Elephant
be
Hat.
In fact, my mom will be there as well.
Wow.
She'll be in town that week.
Excellent.
My goodness.
I know.
Do you have a... is that your only shout? That's a great one. I'm not saying you need
I'm calling
more.
It Nightline.
Wow. Nightline?
Yeah.
Is that the name of
Nightline
it?
Nightline at Primer Gallery. Yeah, because, well, it's going to be one big, long, giant, linear, maybe even continuous linear painting.
You might have a copyright problem with that. Isn't that Ted
Koppel? Is there something else called
Ted Koppel?
I never heard of it. Huh. I'll be darned.
Russ, do you have a shout?
I do. Want to shout out a couple new recordings that are great. The new Tegan and Sarah album.
Oh, damn you.
Wait, you don't like them?
No, it's my one of my shouts.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's great.
I tell you what, they're getting better and better as songwriters. They're so consistent. They are great.
I just posted on Newswig their new video for Hell.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
The video's awesome. The song's awesome. Yeah, the album's amazing.
I
downloaded
it
today.
Tegan
and
Sarah, make any promises, but... I've been talking to them about
interviews. So. Well, we've come pretty close to getting them before, so they are interested in talking
about it. It just didn't work out, right. Yeah. So hopefully this time
works out. But Tegan and Sarah, Sainthood. Also, the new Langhorne Slim is out. Also a friend of the show. It's called Be Set Free.
Yes.
Todd heard some mixed reviews about it. I really enjoy it. I think it's very worth looking
into.
Matter
of fact, I believe it was the... You know how every month in Paste, they have two critics argue?
Oh, they argued about it?
I believe that was the one where they're the two sides. Yeah, you should read
that. I heard that ended up in a knife fight, the two Paste guys.
The people who are kind of firing back on about this album are the same people who... Remember when They Might Be Giants suddenly played with a band and everybody was like, oh no, they're not... It's not just the two guys with the goofy keyboard loops anymore. It's a lot of the negative feedback about this album that I've read has been like that. It's because this is a much lusher
because
recording.
Of the departure.
It's and I don't think it really is. Like, it's the same fantastic songwriting. It's just a little lusher, a little more instrumentation. It is not in any way over polished or overproduced. It is a great recording. And then there's an archival new recording from Morphine, one of my favorite bands. And it is a two-disc set of rarities, unreleased things, a couple of live tracks. It's called At Your Service.
Is that Mark Sandman?
That is Mark Sandman.
Sadly, no longer with us, right?
Sadly, no longer with us. And just what a fantastic band. So to hear some, you know, relatively fresh material from them and some things that have been out there in bootlegs but are very cleaned up, just, you know, another really nice epitaph for a great musical career.
Nice, Russ. See, I like this. See, I like your shouts, and that might be your thing. I think, Russ, that could be your little niche right there.
Is what?
Your shouts, and the little 75-word less little music reviews like you just did there.
Perhaps.
I like that. Perhaps. You'll think about it.
I'll kick it around.
Throw it in the sheet. You know what I'm saying? Throw it in the sheet. Guys, I was going to shout out the new Tegan and Sarah. I'll shout out their video. Hell, go to usewigs.com. It's featured there. It's fantastic. Not only do you get to see the video... Right after the video, you see a making of video that I found. Because you know what I do for you at Use Wigs? I'll give you stuff, and then I'll give you extra. Do you know what I'm saying? My last shout is a movie. It's called Until the Light Takes Us. And it's actually, I saw a good 10 minutes of it. It's fantastic. It's about the Norwegian black metal rise in Norway. And
you didn't see the movie?
No, I saw 10 minutes of it. It's great. It's like a prolonged trailer. They give you like a taste of it. And I read a couple of reviews. And it's about the craziness that went on in Norway about 10 or 15 years ago with all the black metal people who like burnt down churches and really got into some heavy duty like Satanism and it's really, really freaky. And this it's coming out in November. It's called Until the Light Takes. It's supposed to be really good. You don't necessarily have to be a fan of the music, which you're probably not, Norwegian death metal, but just the freakiness of these, where these people keep trying to top each other in their extreme death metal satanic world. Nice. In very desolate Norway.
Yeah.
So that is a little little nice thing for you in for our Halloween show.
All right,
guys, so the camera only froze up once near the end. That was pretty good, right? I think we got the majority of the show in on Ustream.
Those of you with us live, thanks so much. That actually adds a lot to the show. Thanks for being with us, guys.
And you can end the show. Okay,
so that's our Halloween spectacular, and we'll see you next time, which is Podcast 69.